Welcome back. This is Public Address Radio on Radio Live. There was no shortage of people with something to say this week about the short life and death of Nia Glassy, but there were still some gaps. One of the contributors to the Public Address discussion board is Macari Curtis, and he is a member of the extended family. He had a little to tell us about that, and we thought we might invite him in here to tell us a little more. Macari, thanks for coming in. Tell me, let's start at the beginning. When did the whānau first find out about all of this?
I think it was on Friday night when it happened, and then over the weekend, people were making phone calls and working out that it was one of us who was responsible, and then there was discussion about what we were going to do.
Now, when you say when of one of us, what's the context? What's the family arrangement?
One of the wider Curtis whānau. So William Curtis is my first cousin, and then there were his two sons. We don't have as much to do with them as some of the other whānau. They don't come to some of the gatherings at the marae as much as some of the other ones. So, they're slightly more on the outer somewhat from my personal experience.
So to some extent, there is a little bit of the unknown for much of the whānau as well. They don't know exactly what's been happening with this particular group of people.
Yeah, we just assumed that they were living normal lives and that everything was cool, trucking along. And we saw, I met them last year and saw them at my uncle's unveiling. So they're still integrated. They're not completely unknown. It's just they're not some of the usual ones that I normally associate that I would see at weddings and 21st. Mm.
But the reaction from the outset was that the whānau was going to take responsibility here, because I think that's something that hasn't really been well conveyed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We were deciding that there were two issues we were facing. One was that we weren't sure what the media was going to do, and we'd seen how they treated other whānau, and we definitely didn't want to go through that. And the other one was that we really saw it as an opportunity to take real responsibility, and there was no discussion at all of hiding from that responsibility. It was all about, okay, well, we need to actually front up to why has this happened, and how are we going to deal with this, and are there other people who either behave like this or have suffered abuse from members on our whānau or others, and what is the best way to deal with that?
And what's the plan? What do you have in mind?
We've had two hui so far. The last hui, which I didn't attend, decided was that they would delegate to myself and my sister and two of my cousins, one who works in the field of child abuse, and we would come up with a plan and then take it back to the wider whānau for modification and agreement. And that's going to happen over the next month or so. We've had some initial discussions, and it looks like, well, to me it looks like it's going to be a long-term plan where we enable the whānau to actually talk about anything that's happened and do it in such a way that it's a healing process rather than just confrontation.
So part of it is kind of exploring and finding out what's gone wrong?
Yeah, definitely. People telling these stories and finding out, you know, what went wrong in this instance, and is it something that's actually happening in our whānau? I mean, my father was the youngest of 15, and he was born in 1939. So quite a few of my cousins grew up when the police wouldn't turn up to domestics. So, you know, it was easy to hide that kind of stuff. So there's a reasonably high risk that we're going to be uncovering stuff in our whānau, and we need to plan for that, I suppose.
Well, one of the things that struck me is that there's clearly the ability within the wider family to deal with that and to take action. This isn't a family of failure, is it? There are high achievers within that whānau.
Yeah, we're quite a high-achieving whānau. My sister's a doctor. My father's going to be receiving his doctorate later on this year. We're quite fortunate that a lot of us have had education. So we can draw on our own resources and then work out where the gaps are and then look for aspects of the community that we can draw in to help us do what we're doing.
But you sometimes suffer from a blind spot about or a misunderstanding about how an extended family works from the outside, I suspect, don't you? That people say, well, they must all know what everyone else is doing and how have they let this happen, when in fact it sounds as though that's not the case.
Yeah, it's because we're spread out throughout the country. I mean, some of us live in Wellington, some live in Auckland, quite a few live in Rotorua. So unless you're constantly intermingling, or I've got a website and people can read what's going on, you sort of catch up from time to time and just sort of see what everyone's up to and catch up with the gossip and things. And generally, you just assume everyone's doing okay. I mean, it's hard to it's hard to see anything going on at a, say, an unveiling, really. I suppose if you have a wedding and have a good chat with someone, you might find something out or something like that. But generally, everything seems pretty cool.
Is it daunting knowing that as you pointed out in your first post to public address about it, that you are likely to find other cases of abuse perhaps at the hands of the same people? It strikes me as that's not a great prospect to look forward to.
It's not going to be an enjoyable process at all. But one of the points I made when we had our hui was that we've got to do it. If we don't do it, I'll have to explain to my children why they have to do it. And if nobody ever does it, then we're not going to solve anything. So now we've got a situation where it's undeniable that an issue exists and it's severe. So we need to face up and look at what we have to do to deal with it.
Does that mean involving the police if necessary?
I can't really say exactly what decisions we'll do. I think it really depends on the situation and I suppose whether somebody who's suffered abuse, you know, how they're approaching that in terms of their healing process.
But the hui is going to be the fact-finding opportunity, as far as you guys are concerned, to clarify that, I take it.
I think we're more focused on looking at not the specific situation, but looking at the wider issues facing the whānau. I do expect to get, at least certainly from the court case and the police and others who find out what's going on, an understanding of what did take place. Certainly the thing of not knowing where your kids are, just knowing they're with somebody, doesn't happen very much in our whānau. We're quite good at coordinating that.
Another thing you wrote was about, as you described it, the meme that violence has virtually no consequences. And I thought that was really perceptive because it's hard to imagine any other way that this kind of abuse could have happened, the extent to which people don't understand the impact of violence.
Yeah, I've thought this for quite a while. I mean, looking at cases like Michael Choi, the pizza delivery guy who got killed with a baseball bat, they just wanted the pizzas and the money. I don't think they meant to kill him, and I don't think they understood just what happens when you hit somebody really hard with a baseball bat in the head. And I think it's one of those, it's part of the way our media works, is that we've got a lot of shows on TV where the heroes are very violent, and they can take so many hits, which just put people away. I mean, the number of people who just get hit once, fall down, hit their head on a piece of concrete, and die is really high, but you never see it in the movies.
In that sense, the media is not playing a helpful role?
I don't think so. I think they need to be more responsible. I mean, I'm not against violence myself, but I'm against this idea that being violent is consequence-free, because there are always victims.
Because we had people in that public address discussion who said, well, you know, if you want to look at the culture of violence, look at rugby. That's institutionalised violence, which I don't know if I agree with. What do you think about that?
Oh, not at all. Rugby's a sport, and it's a physical sport, and there's rules about it, and there's safety aspects to those rules. Obviously, if you ran up and tackled somebody in the street, that's violence, but not when it's an agreed situation. But that being said, when they talk about argy-bargy and biffo, I really disagree with that. I think there's no place on the rugby field for violence, for hitting people or biting people. And then when you hear these commentators just using euphemisms to describe it as being something that's normal and it's okay, you know, that's a really strong message to young men, that this kind of stuff is a good way to deal with a frustrating situation. And I don't think it's right.
And that's a significant point too, isn't it, that you're talking about young people here who are still impressionable, still finding their feet, who are... appear to be quite adrift.
Yeah, I'd say so. I think, it's about, there's a reinforcement out there going on, and we're seeing the consequences, in my opinion. But I'm not a sociologist. This is just, you know, I'm just a human observing my environment.
There are people campaigning and bandwagoning over this who, at the same time, also supported corporal punishment in the home and opposed Sue Bradford's bill. Do you think part of the answer is to take violence out of the home environment altogether?
I think that's the best solution. I think if we have a situation where if you see somebody being violent, then there's no discussion about whether they were too violent or not too violent. You know, you just say it's wrong, and then we can confront them. Whereas at the moment, if you see somebody, well, prior to Sue's bill going through, when you saw somebody getting violent with their kid and you said, well, you shouldn't really do that, they could say, oh, well, this is okay, this isn't really illegal, and this is normal. And I think we just got to stop normalising violence.
That was Makari Curtis there, talking about the extended family perspective on the Neoglassy case. We'll be back after the break, looking at bananas going global.